above you, and longer if I can. How long will I need you? As long as the seasons need to follow their plan. How long will I be with you? As long as the sea is bound to wash upon the sand. How long will I want you? As long as you want me to, and longer by far.
And if you're hearing that song, which is still one of my favorites, and I don't think I'll change it for a while, How Long Will I Love You, it's a song about commitment, and that's what we do here on the show, and we're committed to helping folks who don't have a voice for themselves and cannot speak. It is, what's the temperature right now? Yeah, we were just talking about this. It's plus 5, and it's November 14th, and I think it's a miracle, but first of all, you're listening to CKUW 95.9 FM, your community radio station right here at the University of Winnipeg, and you're listening to the Hope Valley of No Fixed Address show, and today we're going to spend just a little bit of time talking about Hope Valley, today's a special day, a unique day. Once a year, we hold a homeless memorial service for those that have passed away in the last year. And it was really sobering for me because yesterday when I got the names, you know, we read off, Debbie, 120-some-odd names, and we know that's just a fraction of the people that have died. Those are just the names from several shelters. That's it. Not going through cities, you know, and not going through other agencies or anything like that, but we also know that number is really, really low. And it was so sobering. It's our ninth annual. It's good that we've made it to 9, but it's sad that we've had to have 9 memorial services for people that have passed away in our streets. And for me, it really means a lot. And I brought the idea of a homeless memorial service back to Winnipeg from London, Ontario, where the Canadian Alliance on Homelessness had their conference that year. And one evening, they had a homeless memorial service. And I thought, okay, why does Winnipeg not have something like this? Like, doesn't make sense. Well, we don't. So we brought the idea back to Winnipeg, and we've continued on for 9 years now. And the next year we had it at the Convention Center because the Canadian Alliance on Homelessness came from London to Winnipeg the next year. And so we had it in conjunction with the CEO Sleepout, which is also in conjunction with the conference. And so it was, then the following year we moved it to Hope Valley or Henry Avenue at that particular time. It's for me, because I nearly died three times, had the opportunity to die three times. As a homeless person, it means a lot to celebrate the lives. It's really, really important that we do that. And so we do it every year. Your thoughts on having a memorial service, Debbie?
I think it's something that everyone should know about, and I'm really glad you're talking about it today, Al. Can you tell us a little bit about what it was like this morning?
Yeah. For one, the weather. We usually have it third week of October, fourth week of October. Now it's November 14th, and we're having weather like we usually have in October. So it was really... The weather was really nice. It cooperated really, really well. And it's not just me. It's Main Street Project as well. Because they bring in the hot food. They bring in stew and bannock and coffee and tea and take care of the sacred fire. And Shalom this year delivered tobacco ties for everybody to have and throw in a fire. And it was really good. We had Drake from Main Street Project, who is a ska band, and they have a drum band that they played at least four songs, and it was good service. Sometimes I think it's too simple and it's too casual and all that, and I think maybe we could structure it a little bit better, but then that's not Hope Valley either. You know, we need something that's really simple and no bells and whistles. You know, just something that honors the people and being person-centered. My problem is, as you know, I have a radio show. I can speak for hours. I train for 7 hours at a time. I can speak anywhere to any subject. But every year I have difficulties even getting 2 minutes worth of that 2 minutes worth of talking that seems or important enough to match.
It's a very emotional event, right?
To match the moment. I just can't get the words, you know, and I tend to repeat, and I think the moment is too deep because of my near-death experiences.
Yeah, very close.
Yeah, but it is a very sobering morning, and absolutely what you said. And it's... I just have difficulty. I don't know why, but I just can't come up with the words to match to match the occasion, because death and mortality is such a serious thing, and because I was nearly touched by it, and I think that might be the reason. I don't think about or rationalize it, but I have trouble even speaking for 2 minutes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we had so many people. We had roughly 60 people there this year.
There were 60 people today?
Roughly 60 people. I sent out a lot of invites, and I got a lot of regrets. But that's okay. It's 8 o'clock in the morning in November. I expect nobody to show up. But I have the usuals, and then we had some new people come. And my good friend Christy Pearson showed up today for the first time and just made a point of being there. And she's the keynote at the symposium coming in April again. She's going to be the main speaker. And we had... It was really good. My friend Drake, my colleague Drake from Main Street Project, who's an indigenous leader over there, leads that department. He brought in an elder and a person who leads groups on grieving and loss. And so it was nice to have her there. But she's also an elder. And so it was good to have a person with those skills be there and can talk to issues to people. And I think we just had the right mix of folks there this year. It just seemed, for me, for the first time, it seemed maybe a too simple a service, but I don't think it needs to be anything more, you know.
I think by all that you've described, I think it's very fitting that it meets the moment. And I wonder, one time I remember joining you at Hope Alley.
Yeah.
And back when it was just still developing a couple of years back. Mm-hmm. And what really struck me was the sense of community there.
Mm-hmm. And there is. And it's why I chose that place. because there's always community. There's always people sitting around on the benches there, which we put in as well. And actually, I'm talking to Vivian Santos about our murals again. We're going to start that process over again and get them up in springtime. But it's a place, it's not only a passageway where people cross from, say, going from Shalom to Lighthouse Mission or to Main Street Project or Salvation Army, but it's also a destination. It's a place where people, you know, sit and have community. And even on the colder days, you always see people, 5 or 10 people sitting around, but in summertime, you see 30, 40 people all the time sitting around, you know, on the benches and things like that. Again, it's really, we read the names off, and then we had people come up and talk about the loved ones that were lost. We didn't have that many today, and I was kind of disappointed that community never got up and spoke, but, you know, if the spirit doesn't move you, don't say anything.
Mm-hmm. They may be feeling the same thing you feel.
That's possible too, absolutely. And but we had a couple, and they were, you know, heartfelt talks, but, you know, we always have problems with the mic and getting the sound to carry because it's windy down there and there's traffic, and that was a bit of a problem today. But I think it's really important to put names on statistics, because, you know, lives lost on the street are simply statistics. And you know, I have difficulty with the direction that our province and our city are going. It just seems like every policy they make, every move they make, seems to be detrimental to ending homelessness. I never believe in
it's
ending
more regulatory.
Yeah,
right. It's kind of like a lot of rules.
And what they're doing is they're being punitive, mm-hmm. and they're not helping.
Yes.
Yeah. For example, you and I were just talking, and something on my soapbox about again. First of all, they destroyed the bus system with their new transit system, and I think they're trying to fix it. Maybe, I don't know. But then, and putting so many people at risk, especially with winter coming. And now they've gone to a no fare, no ride policy. They're enforcing that. And, you know, back about 8 years ago, they took away the Spirit bus, the number 3 Spirit bus that went from Main Street, went around to Logan, to Higginson, Maine, all the way down to past Porter's Place into the university and turned around. Over $350,000 they did away with that. Over $350,000 a year they did away with that. Unbelievable. I could not believe it. And they're paying for it. And you have so many people getting on the buses now without paying. And but they're enforcing no fare, no ride policy now, and I see both sides of this. I've been on buses where there's been trouble, but again, you know, what are you going to do if you're a person that does not have bus fare and you got to go somewhere? What are you going to do, right? But our city, in the dead of winter and it's minus 30, they're going to say, "Too bad, so sad. Too bad for you." That's our attitude. That's our city's attitude. It just shows the lack of heart that this city has.
I agree. Vulnerable. You know, it's interesting watching some political leaders like Mamdani mm-hmm. in New York City
yes.
talking about, "I'm going to make the buses free."
Yes.
If New York City mm-hmm. can do that,
why
Winnipeg can do that.
Calgary has a really good system where basically nothing. They have a sliding scale on the buses. If you can't pay anything, you pay a nickel, right? Or you know, or they have a sliding for $5 a month, right?
Mm-hmm.
From $5 a month to $100 a month. People that can pay the $100, pay the $100.
Mm-hmm.
People that can pay $5, pay $5. You know, if we could do that, that would solve a lot of problems.
Because there is dignity in being able to pay for your ride.
Yep. And so now it's going to be. You can't get on the bus if you don't. And this is winter. Sure, a number of people, you know, just ride around on the bus. When I was homeless, I did that once in a while. I just took a bus
to warm up
to the very end of St. Patel and came back again, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just to get out of the cold. And people do that. But they also need to get from place to place.
For sure.
And our city says, we don't care. We simply don't care. Mm-hmm. I think their number they used, like 4.4 million or something, is an exaggeration to rationalize what they're doing. I'm not sure. I can't say that for a fact. But I just feel that that is a really, really wrong move. And in the dead of winter, what's going to happen, right? Sure, I am also a person... because of a care, I'm concerned about Char's well-being mm-hmm. and other people of vulnerability getting on a bus and perhaps getting mixed up. They wouldn't be the target necessarily, but they might get in the way of an altercation or something. I have concerns about that too. But the city has also paid the downtown safety committee or whatever it is really good money, and they've added people to it. And they have a large crew now. But you rarely see them on buses. I think they need to be on buses more and be a visible presence in their orange or green and black and be there as a deterrent. Hmm. And I think that might be the answer. Get more of those folks on the buses. But just to leave people standing at the bus stop in the cold winter, that's not what Winnipeg should be. Mm-hmm. I think we need to show that we have heart. And right now, they're mm-hmm. just showing a cold heart, if I can use that. It just bothers me so much. I understand the safety issue. I really, really do. But what about the safety of those in minus 30 degrees with no place, you know?
In the last couple of years, the sensitivity and compassion for folks living on the margins one way or another is eroding in my sense, which surprises me given mm-hmm. the way people campaigned when they ran for office.
Exactly. And Wahb did campaign on this kind of thing, but he's gone the opposite way. He's taken away human rights of folks in the camps. He came up and they've changed that to the 30-day notice thing for camps. And, mm-hmm. and if, you know, we'll destroy camps, but we'll give you housing. But right now they can't because there's no housing to give them. So the camps... Mm-hmm. Since the problem started, that program, mm-hmm. camps have grown. And mm-hmm. exact opposite effect of what it was supposed mm-hmm. to have. And then the province comes, then the city comes up with the, and McGuffin and Cindy Gilroy, who's our counselor, came up with a motion that passed about camps near parks for the kids, but it's grown to a place where they have like 9 restricted zones where you can't put your camp, and that leaves almost nowhere to go. Mm-hmm. And so why are you're limiting them to everywhere that they can possibly go? And so and then there's this fear of needles, and nobody wants to see kids get stabbed by a needle. No one.
For sure.
And I live at Central Park, and I may have said this on air or not, but there's a splash pad down at the north end. There's a playground with swings and carousels in the middle, and then there's a hill with a slide that comes down. And beside the hill, which is about 200 yards from the, or 150 yards from the splash pad and about 75 yards from the swings, in between there's a hill, and in between the hill and the fence, there was one camp, one tent. And I would go out and feed them and give them water. Then there was two, and same thing. Then there's three, then there was four. And I thought, okay, how long before these ones are removed? But the thing about it is I hang around there quite a bit, and there's no needles, mm-hmm. unless they clean them up, and that would be a good thing, too. But I saw no needles, and yet that camp was removed, and they were causing no trouble for anybody. They mm-hmm. were good people. And mm-hmm. I think the humanity is taken right out of the equation. We're going to move you whether you're good or not, whether you're hurting people or not. We're just going to move you. Mm-hmm. And
we just don't like how it looks.
No, but where are you going to move them to? Because there's no.
I mean, that's what they say.
That's what they say. Yes. No. Of course. But where are you going to move them to? Because we do not have enough housing, and people are trying. But you know, but the city comes up with these ideas that just don't fit the puzzle. You know, they come mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. it's. I find it really, really strange. And now with the That's starting this week, I think. I was supposed to be right in to train the policy enforcement officers. Mm-hmm. Haven't been yet.
You mean for the buses?
No.
Oh, for, which for, policy
for,
enforcement
this
officers?
This is for the playgrounds and other areas.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And
for the camps.
Yeah, for the
I
camps.
See. Right, right.
And I was supposed to be, but I haven't been right in yet. We'll see what happens there. Knowing the city, maybe not, but I do have a good relationship with a lot of people there, in spite of the fact that I beat them up once in a while.
you hold their feet to the fire occasionally. Yes.
Yeah, but now the province has come up with a 72-hour holding policy at 190 Disraeli, where it was a 24-hour drunk tank thing. That was always, and if you hold them longer than that, that's going against their human rights. Now there's a plan starting this next week to put people in and hold them for 72 hours, which is, and I was on Hal Anderson's show, and he asked a good question, well, what if they need the 72 hours? Great, but that's not our call, right? And they need doctors to make that. Who's going to make that call, right? And there's not enough medical staff. As I was speaking to Jamil about it, who's going to be running it. There's not enough medical staff around to man it. They're changing provincial law to allow for 72 hours, but not the federal. The federal law is the same. So they're actually breaking, you know, they were breaking the previous law by doing this, and so they have to change the provincial law so they can actually do it. But who's going to make the call, whether this is a mental health issue at the start or a meth issue or something?
And some addiction issue or
something.
Yeah.
Right? And what you're doing is criminalizing even alcoholism. I mean, it's not against the law to be drunk because because the city would be in jail at one point or another. But they're criminalizing addictions. Every single move goes against the best interest of people in the street. And they do not bring in people like me with lived experience who know better. But, you know, they're just too arrogant in their own ability to do things, and it's a real crying shame. Folks, you're listening to CKUW 95.9 FM, your community radio station at University of Winnipeg, and it is a balmy 5 degrees for November 14th, and just enjoy the weather. It's kind of windy out there, but just enjoy the weather, but when you're going to Tim's or Robin's or Starbucks, get an extra coffee, because it's still cool for anybody that's got to spend 24/7 out there.
And it's gone up to 7 at the
7.
Floor,
oh my goodness.
The airport, and it's forecast to go up to 11 today.
11 degrees on November 14th. That's amazing. And somebody said, "Oh, that's no good for us." But you know what? I'll take it.
We'll take it. That's right.
We'll take it. And you're listening to CKUW 95.9 FM, your community radio station right here at the University of Winnipeg. And we're going to stay tuned. We're having a music break and come on back. Good morning once again, folks. If it's Friday between 11 and 12, let's say, and you're listening to CKUW 95.9 FM, your community radio station right here at University of Winnipeg. You're listening to the Hope Alley of No Fixed Address Show, the voice for people who don't have one, or a voice that people don't listen to. So we do our best. We were talking about Hope Alley today and about the memorial service, and I think, you know, we may have covered that. But it's so good to see community out, you know, different agencies. I did send a lot of invites out, and I said invite. And a lot of people did show up, and some people I did not recognize. That's always a good thing when people come by and you don't know.
And you don't even know who they are.
Don't
That's
know who
great.
They are. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe some agencies sent people instead of the leadership, and I think that might have been part of it. But 60 people is still a big amount of people to come out for a Friday morning at 8 a.m. on a November day. It just shows that the agencies are invested, and, you know, it's not easy to get up and be there at 8 o'clock, you know, to be anywhere at 8 o'clock in the morning. Mm. Never mind staying outside, right? And so it's I was quite thrilled with the response today. And not enough community showed up though. We had a few come through and back and forth and stuff, but not enough to that are usually there. And maybe we just didn't talk about it enough to people, but they did sign the names of people they knew. So, but it's not an easy thing to attend either.
That's right.
And maybe they're missing a meal or something. That might be it too. But it was really good. I'm just going to spend a little bit of time. We're probably going to not have a long program today. Again, talk about the finally upcoming symposium on April 3, and I have one speaker who might be questionable, and throughout all of this, I'll delay it, and I think it's the right move. I was told by many people, just do it back in the same time slot that you have it every year and skip a year. Mm-hmm. And I only had two sponsors say they want their money back, and that's a good thing.
Yeah, that's excellent. And so they're just postponing till the next year.
So everybody was on board with it. And
good.
I think spring is a good time to have a...
Spring anyway. Is a good time, yes.
And so it was. I was very grateful of the response. And my whole thing is, too, if it's not right, I'm not going to do it. And there are too many things in a way. Everybody's would just spend the week before at the Canadian Alliance on Homelessness in Montreal.
Right.
And that was a big reason. And a lot of the attendees, oh, no, we can't make it. Or even sponsors say, you know, who are there? Said, you know, it's too much, you know, like having 6 days mm-hmm. gone from the office.
That's right, yeah.
Is a lot. And there was other mitigated circumstances. And I just needed to be right. And I just didn't feel that it was the best or ideal circumstance. And next year we're going to be okay. The CEO of Myers Norris Penney is going to be a partner in this with me, and he's a great person. He's also the board chair of Main Street Project. And so I also have a couple other heavy hitters who want to be part of it. I've not had that opportunity before to have people say, yes, we want to do this with you. But I'm going to take advantage of it, because this year was way too hard. One of the reasons was I had the wrong person, you know, overpromise and underdeliver, and that just cost me too much stress and time and everything. So I feel good about the spring coming up, and, you know, the bill is, you know, over half paid over at the museum now.
It'll be back at the museum?
Yeah, be back at the museum, because I have added sponsors coming in. It will allow me to be back there. It's really, really expensive, but it belongs there. And I just think that there's something wrong at the Human Rights Museum when the food is most expensive anywhere in the city. And mm-hmm. I just think there's something, you know, intrinsically wrong about that. But it's not CMHR that does it. It's a catering company mm-hmm. that runs it.
It is a federal building, right?
So it is a federal building.
So maybe they have a different sort of yardstick to yeah. measure things by.
Yeah, and I'm going to have a meeting with Aisha Khan pretty soon. We have, you know, and she's the CEO down there, so we're going to meet pretty soon. But, you know, again, Christy Pearson showed up at the memorial today, and she is somebody I really adore, if I can use that term, but admire, right? She does so much in the community. Her and her husband are millionaires 10 times over, and they're still. She is still down on the dirt working at 190 Disraeli so often, getting clothing and other items for the homeless. And she's my keynote because I felt that, you know, we could not be better represented than a person with that kind of attitude towards.
She walks the walk.
She walks the walk. And also I'm thinking, you know, if I have one person drop out, I think I have maybe one drop in, but I'm also thinking about bringing, this name might not be familiar with you, but Samia Sadiq. I'm not sure you know that name or not, but she's a huge human rights, internationally known human rights person in Winnipeg here. And I met her when Christy Pearson gave me a ticket to a play that she was sponsoring through Narratives, which is an organization that she runs on human rights. And Christy says, you got to meet her. She'll love you or whatever. And so she was standing at the front, and I was coming down the steps, and I tripped and just about fell on my face, so I got attention right away. but her and I talked, and right away we had a connection, and then we met for coffee, and we really hit it off. And then she invited me to her book launch. She had a book launch in the park, in the conservatory, but the Leaf, I think it is. And we hit it off, and I heard her speak, and she speaks with a lot of passion and heart. And I think if I could have both of those on the same, I'd be just a super dynamic day. But also, if I could have Christy this year and Samia next year, that'd be good too, because she is somebody that everybody would be drawn to.
So maybe you can talk a little bit, Al, about what led you to put the symposium together and what the mission of the symposium, why do you want to hold it every year?
Yeah, well, it's a bit of a, I wouldn't say controversial, but something I just had to do. Because a service provider, a housing provider, I'm not going to get into the names because this person and I are friends, but, and she's been on the show, or this person has been on the show.
As many people
have. As many people have. But one day during a council meeting, this person said, human rights don't matter when it comes to bus shelters and hoarding. And they were talking about the bus shelters on Naren and State Barn. And they were also talking about hoarding. And she was talking about giving the police rights if they think a person is hoarding. You can go in without a warrant. Okay, you're really crossing the line and breaking all kinds of laws when you're doing that. But this was the way the conversation went. And the two counselors did not disagree with her. Mm. And it was so horrible. And so I said that, okay, if their rights, the people on the street's rights don't matter, then ours don't either. And then we're living in this anarchist world that is not good for anybody. So I felt that I had to put on a symposium. I had to do something. So the first thing that came to my mind, or one of the first things that came to my mind, was putting on a symposium. But that was kind of a dumb thing to do, because we put it on, and you helped me in this one, in the first one. And did that in like 10, 11 weeks. It was like crazy fast for a symposium. But it turned out really, really well. And sure, there were little glitches, but there's glitches in everything.
And you invited... So when people came from all the sectors,
yes,
that's what really impressed me. This was people who actually have some role in in making sure that folks who are unhoused have access to services of some kind or another.
Yes, and including, and that was one of my purposes too. I mean, that was an additional thing that just came to mind, to have different sectors in the same room at the same time, at the same table. And so, you know, how do you change things if you're always stuck in the same thought process? If all of a sudden this healthcare person who you always wanted to meet but never met is at your table, they're in a different sector than you are, you can add new and innovative ideas, or at least approach, you know, different ways of thinking. And so one of my thought processes was is to have as many areas of interest, of the cross-section of sectors, be in the room at the same time that were related, but not really, but not together in the same sector. And so one of the feedbacks I did get, the best feedback and the most feedback I got was, oh, number one, everybody thought it was a good day and all that, but was I got to speak to somebody I always wanted to meet, and I never met her or him before, and we had a really good conversation about things. And then what else I had at the end of the day was Noel DePop, who's now with the province, who was with the city and has been a friend for a long time. And what Noel did was a kind of a next steps type of thing, or what did we learn today? And she did a really good job. It's like she'd done it for a million years. And it just really warmed my heart the way she did that. On the day of, I don't pay that much attention to what's going on. In the first year especially, I did not want to be disappointed. I did not want to be overly pleased with anything, so I kind of stayed away from listening to most of it. But I did listen to Noelle at the end of the day, and she was really, really, really efficient and good at what she did. But the reason why I put it on was because somebody said human rights don't matter. And it had to matter. And what I was really happy with is Aisha Khan, who's the CEO of the museum, was my keynote, and she was really, really good. I really appreciate her and what she had to say. And Samia Sadiq is the same kind of person, and as dynamic, if not more dynamic. And she's a person of color as well. And she is going to be really, really good. And her and I are going to go for coffee in the next 2 weeks. So she was going to be at the symposium this morning, but emailed me at like 6:30 and said, I'm, you know, not able to make it. And that's fine.
You mean she was going to be at the memorial service today?
Yeah, right. And so in the next year, we continued with Karen Sharma, who is the CEO of the Manitoba Human Rights Commission. And she's the right person, but she just, I don't think she was on her A game that day. And from what I listened to her, I hope Karen, you're not listening today. I was still blown away by Aisha Khan. And this year, I think I have overall a more impactful speakers bureau or speakers roster. I'm opening with Shauna Menkes from Sarah Riel and Marion Cooper from CMHA, who's now the national executive director. And that's a really good way to start, because you're setting a really good tone. And I have very high quality and leadership people as my lived experience team on panel this year. The problem is the first 2 years, the people were all good, but I felt that we needed to show leadership. I felt that we needed to, that I needed to show that this is where people lived experience can go. And this is, you can depend on these people to be leaders for you. They do not have to be subservient people. And or second-class citizens. This is the world that they can play in your organization, and I've gone in that direction this year, because I think we need to really set a high bar for people with lived experience, for others to see that. I have Bradley West, who's one of my coups. I love Bradley West. He was actually the founder of the first Pride Parade in Winnipeg, and again, another bad move by the city. They cut out their equity and diversity department, and he was director of that. How do you do that in this day and age, right, of rights and everything? How do you cut out your equity and diversity department? But he's going to fill two roles. He's going to be the last speaker of the day, and he's going to hold our, our next steps. And he's got to do it. And he's an encyclopedia. He can talk on any subject at all. And he wants to talk on right to housing. I want him to speak on LGBTQ, homeless issues and all that kind of thing. So we'll see where that goes. Whatever he talks on, he's going to be good. And again, with Christy Pearson being the lifting up the room speaker, it's all good. I have a master's degree of human rights at U of M. She's now working in the city of Winnipeg. Trixie Mountbatten is going to be speaking. I have Kat Roberts speaking on issues of poverty. I think she may drop out, but if she does, there's so many other people that can speak on issues of poverty quite fluently. And it just goes on. And I think my speaker may be, my indigenous speaker might be Lucille Bruce. I'm part of a couple of seniors advocacy boards, and she's the chair of one of them. And she's the second CEO of End Homelessness Winnipeg. And Jason was supposed to, first of all, Betty was supposed to be, and then she left End Homelessness Winnipeg. Then Jason was supposed to be, and he left Homelessness Winnipeg. And I really need to have a very strong indigenous speaker and somebody who can be. I'm not sure Lucille Bruce is that person. She's got a reputation and everything, but I'm not sure she's the best speaker. But we'll find somebody. That's been a struggle for all year for me to find the right indigenous speaker. But it's really important because 85% of our folks on the street are indigenous.
Right.
The big panel is Julian Atkins, who's become one of my favorite people in the sector. She's the CEO of Shalom. I have Jamil, of course, from Main Street Project. Not Mark anymore, because she's not going to be at Salvation Army, but then I'll round up the next executive director. And Frank Parks from 180 Israeli.
Right. That'll be a
great panel.
It'll be an amazing day.
Yeah, and Myers-Norris Penny is going to be moderating that session. So it's going to be a good day, and there's more, too, that doesn't come to mind.
Something to look forward to. And it's April?
Yeah, April 3rd, again Monday, and back at the CMHR. It'll depend on what room we have, see if people, attendees drop, because we're going to have over 200 attendees. And then we have to rent a bigger room. The room wouldn't cost any more, but the food would cost more for all those people. We'll see. We'll see if we go back into the. It all depends on how the attendance looks. But when the mayor hypes it and other people hype it, Tessa Blakey White Cloud is going to be a speaker as well.
Great.
And she's not with the province anymore, or won't be as of December 1st, but she's in housing, so she's still involved. She's been in for a long time. It doesn't matter whether she's in the sector or not. She's really knowledgeable and stuff, and a really dynamic speaker. Mm-hmm. She's really good. I heard her one time. I said, wow, okay. I kind of thought she would be, but you never know until you hear a person, but she was really, really good. Folks, we're kind of getting down to the wire here. We got a few minutes to go, but there's other things I could talk about today, but I think we're going to leave it there. It's a balmy 7 degrees now, Debbie tells me, and my goodness, November 14th. And I thank the Creator first thing this morning at the ceremony for giving us such a beautiful day to gather together. But again, 11, is it 11 degrees? Oh my goodness!
It'll be forecast
okay.
High.
Forecast high is 11, but again, going to Tim's, buy a coffee. It's still cold enough to buy a coffee, right? And be kind. We have to say that every week. I was in isolation. I rarely ran into people that gave me anything. I never begged, and I was not somebody that would do that. I was too proud to beg. So life is tough, and this morning showed us there's way, way, way too much work to do because we lost way too many lives. And we read off so many names today. It was so depressing. But we also know that's maybe half or a third of the actual people that died because of the drug epidemic going on. And the problem is we cannot count on our politicians to actually do the right thing anymore. We can hold them accountable because everything just seems to be going against the people on the street and making their lives harder, not easier. So, but folks, again, be kind out there. Buy a coffee, buy a muffin, buy a donut. Just don't give out granola bars. If you're going to give out something like that, give out chocolate. Chocolate will lift their spirits with the sugar and all. Even though people are diabetic out there, having that burst of well-being is better than a granola bar, let me tell you.
Good advice.
What's that?
Good advice.
Yeah. Well, it's so important that people feel good for as long as they can. But folks, come back next week. Next week I may not be on air because we have a lived. Actually, yes, next week we have a lived experience. State of the Union mini forum that we're putting on, and it's being funded by the Main Street Area Action Plan.
Wow.
And we're having it at the United Way boardroom. We've been given that place for free. And it's just, some organizations walk the walk, but most of them just talk the talk. They let people with lived experience go so far and no further. And people like today, like Monica Ballantyne, who's the lived experience advisor at Shalom, they actually have one. You read out the names today, and she's a leader, and she said, "Oh, you and I can do amazing things here." And, well, yeah, we can. And more numbers are better. But we need to know how people are being treated in and out of the office, because some people with experience don't have work and some do. But if you're in the job, how are you being treated? If you're out of the job, when you attend meetings, how are you being treated at those meetings? Are you given the voice that you should have? Do you feel that you're being respected? I'm part of a couple of seniors groups, and there's some really educated people in that room. But yesterday I had to actually say something because, for example, with Make Poverty History Manitoba and a couple other groups, we wanted to see Heather Stevenson, when she was the Minister of Welfare and Child and Family Services. And she did not ask anybody else questions except for me. She did not want to speak to anybody else except for me. And so I tried to get that message across. You need to get to the person's heart. And politicians don't always want to hear numbers. They don't want to hear, what your policies are. And sometimes they want to hear grassroots reason why. And that's what I bring to the table. But just
they want to hear the story.
They want to hear the story and why. Okay, why do we want to do this? I can bring that why answer in. And they get bored. Not bored, but, okay, I'm tired of hearing the same old, same old. We know that already. We know those stats. So I come in, and it's happened so many times that people, they're drawn to my story for sure, and so they want me to answer questions for them. And it's so hard to get that reasoning across to people. Like, they're going to meet the new seniors advocate, who is a bad hire because she knows nothing, and they expect her to grow into the job. We've seen that before in other places. It doesn't work. But five MLAs decide she's the one, but just shows their lack of knowledge about what seniors need when you bring in a person who has no knowledge or very little. So I use that metaphor. When you listen to any sporting event, watching any sporting event on TV, there's a commentator and there's a color commentator. And the commentator calls the game at face value, calls it exactly how he sees it. But the color commentator, who's 100% of the time a player or a coach, says why it happened. This is why. This is how they should have done it. and all that kind of stuff. And I see, you know, articulate people with lived experience, lived experience leaders being that color commentator, and having both come together, right? And not just a PhD or not just a master's degree, but a master's degree working with a person with lived experience, having that L-E in back of, you know, your name instead of the M-A. It's the best way to do it, because you bring in two sides, you know, two ways of thinking about things. And I went on for about 5 minutes at a meeting yesterday, made sure I got my point across. And actually, one of the board members is also a professor at the University of Manitoba. And when I was in Montreal, she brought me into a teacher class over Zoom, which is really, really good. And it was a great class. But there's always work to be done on lived experience. And on Friday, next Friday, the 21st, we're going to examine those things. We're going to send a report on what we talked about and what the consensus was to all the community organizations out there and to both levels of government, and say, okay, this is where it's at. What are you going to do about it? And how are you going to change it? And so those are the questions we're going to ask too, and how we're going to make changes. But folks, getting to be that time. We have How to Survive a Tornado coming back on. I failed to mention that so many times, but we're going to start doing that.
Yeah, that's coming up at CKUW 95.9 FM.
CKUW 95.9 FM. And come back next week. We'll put on an entertaining show. It won't be me here. It'll be an archive show. But we'll find something that'll keep you listening to us for an hour. Anyway, have a good week. Be kind. Buy two coffees. Buy two steep teas.
Buy some chocolate.
Buy some chocolate. Yes. No granola bars. Buy some chocolate. And see you in a couple weeks, folks. Have a good week.